The nation, the Gaigahonna are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigahonna dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigahonna people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Could we get a roll call, please?
Diviaki Raju, Amita Akpan, Marwa Bakri, Lucia Balastrary, Lizzie Barrett.
Representatives, please state your name when you have a proxy.
Isa Tuberi, Franklin Berry, Simone Chan, Rocco Lorenzo,
present,
Zora Durham, David Diao, Karis Everett, Christian Flournoy, Allison Helkowski, Niles Height, Cassandra Jordan,
here,
Sion Kim, Clyde Letterman,
present,
Laura Meng, Yash Moitra, Ezugo Anonye,
okay. Oh, testing. Testing. Oh, you hear
Hello.
Me?
Suraj Parikh. Casey Platkin. Amani Rizeka.
Present. Present.
Stellar Sun.
Present.
David Suarez. Benjamin Terhar. Claire Ting.
Excused.
Adam Vinson. Present. Amy Wang. Patrick Keel.
Present. All right. We will now move on to the announcements section. Are there any announcements on the floor?
I ask for unanimous consent at the rules to be suspended and at the appointments and vacancies calendar be moved up to after announcements.
The motion on the floor is to suspend the rules and move the vacancies calendar up to the current item on the agenda. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that motion is in order. Vacancies calendar is now next. Okay, so the two appointments for today are to the Student Health Advisory Committee, Christian Flournoy and Ramsey Bofkick. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that is in order. Congratulations to both of you. All right, we'll now move on to open microphone. This is a time for community members to speak if they wish. There is a 2-minute speaking time. Are there any speakers at this time? Seeing none, we will move on to the approval of the minutes from last meeting. If everyone could open up your box and look at the meeting minutes and make a motion when you're ready. Trustee Swanson.
Motion.
That is so ordered. The meeting minutes to be passed by unanimous approval. Is there a second? There is a second on the floor. Is there any dissent? Okay. Would you like to withdraw your motion? All right. The motion is withdrawn. Representative Everett.
Second.
There is a second on the motion to pass last week's meeting minutes by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the meeting minutes are passed. We will now move on to... There are no presentations today. There's nothing on the consent calendar. Does anybody have any items to add to either of those? Point of information. Basically, if there are short items that we need to get done as like administrative things, but we still need to pass them, we can put them all on the consent calendar as a block. So like small typo fixing resolutions, and we pass them as a block. So you pass a consent calendar as a block. And then if there's dissent to that, then we vote on everything individually. Just for efficiency, you can add things. Seeing no points or motions on the floor, we will now move on to the report section, the chunky report section of today. Vice President De Lorenzo, please take your place at the front of the room. Trustee Swenson, point or motion on the floor.
Just point of inquiry.
Point of inquiry.
Are we setting time limits for VP De Lorenzo?
Yes, we will. De Lorenzo, how much time do you think you need? Okay. You want?
Can I have a perspective? I mean, all these are posted before this meeting. So if everyone just can take or took the time to read the documents, you'd save so much time.
That point is recognized.
Promise, like I'll be quick.
Okay. Decorum, everybody. This is a reminder that we do have to try to pass all of these today. If we do not pass all of these today, we will need to call a special meeting the week after we get back from Thanksgiving, either on Monday or Tuesday, which I would prefer not to do. Because of the significant amount of things we have to get through today and also the criticality of the situation, I will be calling the question rather early in discussion. So please make sure your points or motions are crisp and clear and your points are to the point and not... restated from other people's questions. Is that clear to everybody? Okay. Yes. VP DeLorenzo, please take it away with Gender Justice Advocacy Coalition.
Cool.
You have 12 minutes on the clock. I'll give you a gavel bang in 2 minutes.
Awesome. So yeah, so basically the first part of the resolution that we, or the report that we put forth last week, that is all included in the beginning, and then there's an addendum attached. Everything in red was something that we went in and edited around. Just to make it more factually correct in terms of more information that we learned. So within this, some just things to point out is that in addition to this year, originally it was the belief that GJAC was going to be allocating $10,000 to each of their organizations, and that would be all the co-sponsorships. It turns out for this year expenses, that's an additional $10,000 on top of their original $25,000. And then in terms of the Feminism Food for Thought event that was hosted 9 times, in review of the accounting books, I could only find transactions for 2 of them. So I just want to point that out. Just a little bit of the discrepancy, like middle of the second page, just about like their rollover. And then just clarification about the menstrual products giveaway initiative. So some of these products are basically they're purchased in bulk upfront for a given time period, for which they can last for more or less than one calendar year. So it's not set on one full calendar year. And then they're restocked by Cornell facilities when the baskets in the restrooms are empty. When the total number of products runs out after the bulk purchase, another bulk purchase is ordered and expensed in the fiscal year in which it occurs. Then we kind of go into details behind that later in the recommendation. And then the part in here was edited around a little bit on the last page of the initial report to basically just say the appropriations, we want to see this continue, but we want to see the initiative continue in the most successful manner. That's just a brief summary of that. But we go over all the changes in the ending part of this. So turning to the addendum right now, this provides an overview of basically everything that had happened in the previous sort of week or so. So after last Thursday's meeting with the student assembly, the official Cornell Track general accounting ledger was sent to me. I reviewed it. Basically, there was a situation where the advisor, before she had sent it, she had edited the budget, like the official accounting one, and like deleted the credit column, which is what I kind of picked up on. So then she sent me a new updated one. I would say that due to some of the initial accounting discrepancies that were detected upon the initial review of the Excel workbooks, I basically spent last Friday and Saturday trying to reassemble all of their expenses. And the gist of this is that upon my calculation, I calculated a number that was around 57,000 in terms of their ending rollover balance for last year, which would have been their beginning balance for this year. But then later that night, after I sent the email to the GJAC representatives, they basically came to me later that night saying that their beginning balance for this year was somehow 67K. So there was 10K discrepancy that we couldn't identify. But a lot of those reasons we're going to outline right now as to why that might have occurred. So basically, one of the primary factors that could have contributed to the discrepancy is that to fund all aspects of the organization, there are various transfers into and out of accounts, with unspent funds being sent back to GJAC at the end of each academic year. Broadly speaking, GJAC has four methods of expenses to fund their operations. The first one is pulling directly from the general accounting ledger of the organization. The second is pulling from campus groups' GJAC ledger, whereby the funds are transferred beforehand. The third is pulling from the GJAC allocation that GJAC allocates itself. And the fourth is pulling from the allocation GJAC gives to the Gender Equity Center, which is formerly known as the Women's Resource Center. So what I figured might be easiest is to create a visual demonstration of sort of this accounting, what I mean. So if everyone can turn to exhibit one right now, and we can kind of see like where a lot of this confusion might come from. So originally, right, like every year, GJAC gets their annual student activity fee allocation. It's then sent to the GJAC general accounting ledger, which they are allowed to pull from, but throughout the year, right, they're pulling money from that accounting ledger and allocating it to co-sponsorships. These co-sponsorships for other supplementary funding orgs, they're mainly meant to fund non, like, supplementary funding orgs, as well as, like, the department that they're very closely attached with. But in the case of GJAC, right, like, they are pulling some of that money that they give to co-sponsorships, and they're pulling it and allocating it back to themselves. In addition to this, they're also allocating some of the money to the Gender Equity Center. And the reason why those arrows that are red are kind of highlighted there is that is just sort of like a suspicion, right, of being like, I can't exactly tell where the transactions are coming from and where the original money was, because there's a lot of finagling of these funds. So separate from the co-sponsorships, they can also, you know, from the general accounting ledger, they transfer it to the campus group's budget. And so from that, they're able to pull money from that budget throughout the year. And so what this all basically leads to is that if I was a member of GJAC and I wanted to put on either a programming event, funding event, something like that, I really have four methods to pull the expenses from these different accounting budgets. And yes, they may be all transferred together at the end of the year, but this can, you know, definitely create some confusion if you are a member of the organization. You're trying to calculate how much money you actually have, how much you've spent, stuff like that. So this, you know, the text below this basically highlights that, and it says that, you know, this could potentially lead to overspending or under budgeting because you really don't know where the money is until the very end of the year. And so on top of all the complex expense models, which make it difficult to see the actual incurred expenses of GJAC, this also leads to internal confusion about where the funds are being transferred from to fund a specific initiative that organization offers. So the example I outlined below is some of, you know, like one, probably one of my best findings in terms of reviewing the budget. And so originally on the one of the first sheets that GJAC had sent me, there was a charge for $633 for Plan B and contraceptives in the 2020 to 2023 academic year. So in looking at all these budgets, I couldn't find a charge that was $633. So what I did is I compiled all of the expense transactions and I Googled how much Plan B costs at Cornell Health. It costs $45, and because there's no tax, we know that a single Plan B, like if an expense was charged for Plan B, it should be divisible by 45. So I ended up finding a charge for $135. And so that kind of told me that that's a very even charge. The odds that something else would have occurred are very slim. And so subtracting the $135 from $633, we end up with a charge of $498. Correspondingly, there was a $498 charge within the campus group's budget, but that was marked as for pregnancy tests. And so although that, you know, extra 498 could have been made up of more composite numbers I still haven't identified yet, it's also very, you know, the odds of that happening within all the transactions are slim if there's a charge that's $498 and it adds up to 633 exact. So although GJAC reported like Plan B contraceptives is this amount, in campus groups, a component of that was flagged as a pregnancy test. So I truly think that like they're, in terms of reporting, they might not know exactly where these charges are coming from. And so it makes it even more confusing. So finally, from the programming and funding of the initiatives GJAC does throughout the year, they basically have the method to fund those programs through allocations to non-GJAC and non-Gender Equity Center organizations, or allocations to the Gender Equity Center or co-sponsorships of programming between GJAC and the Gender Equity Center. So in terms of trying to backtrace all of the things and why having that credit column is so beneficial is because at the end of every single year, when GJAC allocates the money to those sub-organizations and they say, all right, here you go, you can have the money. If those organizations don't spend that money in that current academic year, it reverts back to GJAC. And so this is why in some of the columns I've been going through before, I've noticed this big transfer of funds and it's through campus groups, but it's a transfer of funds back to GJAC at the end of the year. So that could have also led to why they might have had more rollover than I would have expected at the very end. But it just goes to show you that like you truly don't know how much money you have, or at least right, if you just use a ratio that's like, all right, 15% of the money will get sent back, it makes it kind of easy to budget. But in the case of GJAC, right, there was a lot of money that I just couldn't account for. I would say that there was a transaction to the Gender Equity Center, which I could only trace back. You know, I think that total transaction was like $8,000, and I can only trace back around 2.5. So I don't really know where the other 5.5 went, but I know if the Women's Resource Center, Gender Equity Center is a Cornell department, the odds that they pay their staff to work there are very high. So this also brings up another issue of the commingling of funds and using that if they're not in separate accounts, but it's all things that I think there's room to address later on. In addition to all these budgets, we basically highlight the fact that it, you know, for GJAC, right, when there was an expense for a program, they marked the expense in the initial sheet as coming from the GJAC internal budget, and they marked that there, but they also marked the expense from campus groups, the total transfer to GJAC. And so what it turns out to be is those transactions were within campus groups. So in effect, they kind of double counted the numbers when reporting their expenses. All in all, you know, touching on now, and you know, maybe I'll ask to extend time because I feel like this is beneficial to go through and explain. But basically, the menstrual product giveaway and the crux of where these transactions might have happened. So it was originally a belief that in the academic year last year, the initiative cost $59,000. This ended up not being the case. And we were kind of sitting there saying, you know, one person was saying, oh no, it was a backtrace expense. The other person was saying, oh no, it was a forward tracing expense. And so that $59,000 charge, to my knowledge initially, and this is what the advisor confirmed at the beginning of September, it's what was submitted on their sheet, is that that $3,800, which charged to spring 21 to pay back the money then, the 27.5 was used to fund the initiative last year, and they fronted another 27.5 to front the initiative for this year. And so in going through all of these numbers, there, you know, the story changed, right? The story was initially they funded the products for last year, or they funded the products for this year in the fiscal year last year, which made their expenses go up. And so this is where we're kind of sitting here now and asking, okay, did that charge occur or did it not? Because it's not like we can rely on the rollover balance to go and figure it out. In this sense, in going through all these budgets, there's basically two accounts which would have led to two different scenarios. So as noted earlier—
That is time, De La Renza. Please finish with the allocation now and what it was before.
So if anyone's curious, it's definitely been frustrating, this entire process. The appropriations in the end, we decided to allocate them to 345. Partly that was because we couldn't really rely on the rollover balance last year. And there was sort of a toss up on if those expenses would have been charged this year. So we gave GJAC the benefit of the doubt there. Although, you know, we're talking about 1.5K versus like 27K. So in reality, it's like it wouldn't really have made a difference. But mainly the second reason is that after the whole thing last week, I mean, people online were slaughtering the appropriations committee and myself, direct attacks personally, and, you know, everything else behind it. And I think there was a sentiment of the appropriations committee. They just wanted that to stop. And they just said, all right, screw it. You can have your way. Got it. And to that, I say that for a process that's so based in finances and that we've done objectively a very good job at doing, and we can prove that later on today when I present. But, you know, when the finances are muddled and they're in a wreck, we really have nothing left to rely on except for remission. And in this case, there was a lot of pushback, a lot of inflaming, a lot of people just kind of rubbing it in, not really getting the whole story. Then it kind of turned into a situation of like, okay, fine. You can have your way, but so long as you take your people back, you need to tell them to stop. And the equivalent to that is, you know, they bullied their way into the allocation they wanted. And I, you know, I think we've done this so many times at this point, right? This has got to be like the 27th, 28th award.
Members are recognized.
Yeah. Besides all that, there were a lot of stipulations attached to GJAC. So first stipulation was they needed
DeLorenzo,
to. Yeah.
Member you're recognized. That is in order. Is there a second? Okay, we're now in open debate. Are there any points or motions on the floor?
Patrick.
De La Renza, you're recognized.
Thank you. So a lot of stipulations attached to their funding. In this circumstance, right, we say that they need to dedicate a lot of time internally to fixing the accounting and figuring out what's going on, clean up the accounting and basically make it so that if GJAC wants to program and they want to do something, the money doesn't need to be transferred to the gender equity center person, then like expense out. It should just be expensed by GJAC. So that's the first stipulation. The second one is basically given GJAC's very close tie to the gender equity center. I mean, they're transferring over between 6 and 8K per year. And this year it's expected to be around 40K. We basically say, and you know, we note this as the appropriations committee, GJAC, like if you're a supplementary funding org, you should be funding other undergrad student organizations and putting on your own programming. And if you want to have such close ties to this department, then you should become a department organization, which will then stop the co-sponsorships. And so we kind of laid it out for them. I think they're going through to address it. And if they decide to stick with the supplementary funding org side and basically do all their own programming, do all their expenses, do everything else through that and co-sponsorships, it will also help fix the accounting in the end because they're not going to have to worry about those transfers in and out to themselves and Women's Resource Center. The last
point of information recognized.
Did my motion to end debate, like, was that voted on? Like, was I said unanimous consent? Is there any dissent to that? Like,
would you like to make a motion right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Motion on the floor.
I move to end debate.
There's a motion on the floor to end debate. Is there a second? There is a second. Is there any dissent?
There's a third stipulation. People want to read it and read it.
Okay, I'll just add a quick note here too. Your motion is in order, and we will pass it. Vice President Ting and I sat down with Dean Love today, and we're going to work with SCL, the Student Assembly, and GJAC to make sure that everything is, you know, good moving forward. SCL is committed to like making sure that GJAC also has the resources to be able to manage finances in a way that they feel comfortable with, and all of that moving forward. So that is a problem that we will deal with. And something we'll deal with next semester after we're done appropriating money. Seeing no dissent, we are now in open debate on GJAC. That motion is to end debate. We'll now vote on the allocation from the Appropriations Committee. Any motions on the floor?
I move to accept the Appropriations Committee's recommendation of $3.45.
That is in order. Is there a second? There's a second on the floor. Is there any dissent to approving the Appropriations Committee's recommendation? Seeing no dissent, that is passed. Congratulations, GJAC. All right, we're going to move on to Haven. Taylor, do you think 5 minutes is appropriate?
Yes. Yep, that works for me. So Haven is the LGBTQ student union, and the appropriations recommends funding them at $5.40. They're basically a supplementary funding org. They're dedicated to enriching Cornell University by supporting a diverse array of sexual and gender identities and expressions through education, outreach, and service. Haven promotes an understanding and development of inclusive communities. So Haven basically, the organization wise, they are comprised of six exec board members, with three being sophomores, three being juniors, and the e-board meets weekly to give their updates and work on other tasks that the organization needs to complete. Throughout the week, Haven e-board members contribute to programming aspects and just help plan things overall. So in their overall calendar of events, Haven organizes programming for the community throughout the year, and the events that they normally program throughout the year, they're listed there. With their flagship event being the Pride Prom at the very end of the academic year. So in terms of the finances, Haven, there is a split between the funding that they give to other organizations as well as the programming that they do. And that split is approximately 60% of the money is basically given to funding, 40% on the programming events. And additionally, in this past sort of academic year, they had expenses totaling around $64,400 that can be broken down into five categories. So the first of these categories is basically their funding of 25 to 30K, unofficially around that range, that it, to like to other organizations. And the subcategory behind this, so this is technically category one, is basically the sub-organization funding, which is $600 annually that last year they gave to nine organizations. And then they also gave them additional funding as well, like some component of it. And then in terms of co-sponsorships, this is the money that Haven contributes to the other organizations to partner on programming events throughout the year. So all of those are listed there. That was around 15.4K last year. In terms of the programming of Haven, it's broken down to two categories, again, the small scale events, which we reviewed above, as well as their large event, which is the Pride Prom. At the end of the year. And so there's some data in here about basically the average cost of event and then number of people that would attend. So like the cost per person. And so, you know, in comparing that to other organizations, the Haven was a little bit higher than, you know, if we're doing just like a quick comp, but we can go over that later in this. And then I would also note their last event of the year, the Pride Prom, they basically go all out, right? And I think it's a good event, but it does have like pretty high costs attached to it for the number of people that attend. But again, we'll get to this later on. So the last primary category of expenses is their internal operation ones. So basically last year, Haven incurred a charge that was pretty high in terms of the internal expenses, but this was to pay for apparel that they would be giving out over the next few academic years because they had just gotten a new logo. So we basically appreciate the fact that they're using like bulk quantity purchasing to like get their items because they're cheaper. So I think that was definitely really cool. You know, in terms of programming, everything else, they had a beginning of the year balance. You know, I'll just note on this, right? Haven, out of like all the organizations that we've reviewed, has consistently done a fantastic job at keeping the rollover low and properly budgeting compared to their expenses. And I think that is something that truly across this entire cycle, we've seen some wild rollover numbers. Like, no, like Haven is on top of it. So I really appreciate that. In terms of the overall structure of Haven, I think one thing that was a little different is that they don't technically have a G body, right? Their G body equivalent is the email listserv or communications that they reach out to people in their community, but all the work is really done by the executive board. And so under that structure, right, when we asked about it, Haven was basically like, yeah, we think the community should benefit from the work of us. And if they want to choose to help out, they have the option to, it's not required. And we're basically doing everything for them. And I think that approach, it's definitely not what other orgs are doing, but I think it serves Haven very well. Only thing to note though, is that, we did approve the increase because of inflation, the growing cost of the people that growing the market of people that attend their events. But we also noted that basically given the lack of like G-body meetings, lack of like bringing everyone together, like a lot of people who are like, I'm in that org, right? Versus like you get the email list. We basically say just like focus on marketing a little bit, just make sure that more people attend the events. And then like if you want to spend more money on the events,
that's not the other one.
It's bad. But yeah, I mean, overall, super impressed. I think they'll do very good in the future.
Okay, and I'd just like to, I don't know if representatives from Haven are here today, but I just wanted to give a quick shout out. I thought your event that you put on a couple weeks ago in response to a speaker on campus was inspirational, to say the least, and was very impressed by that. So that's all I have. Motion on the floor. You're recognized.
I move to end debate.
That motion is in order. Is there a second? Okay. We'll now move into voting for motion. Representative Wong. Okay. Motion on the floor is to approve the Appropriation Committee's recommendation. Is there any seconds? There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that is passed. Congratulations, Haven.
Okay. So MGFC is the Multicultural Greek and Fraternal Council. Basically, they're within Cornell Greek Life, there are three councils. There's the Interfraternity Council, the Panhellenic Council, and then the Multicultural Greek and Fraternal Council. And within MGFC, they currently have 15 active chapters, and they're one of Cornell's three Greek councils. And within MGFC, they have three sub-councils. So they have the National Panhellenic Council, the National APIDA Panhellenic Association, and the National Association of Latino Fraternal Organizations. So operationally, MGFC has an exec board of 9 members, with 5 being seniors, 2 being juniors, and 2 being sophomores. They host weekly president and representative meetings where each chapter can send someone to council to get updates. And they also meet weekly as an e-board with their fantastic advisor, Kyle McGee. So regarding the overall calendar of events of what MGFC does is, they're classified as a supplementary funding org. So they host some of the programming stuff. So they do trainings throughout the year, the MGFC Gala, they partner with sub-organizations to host sub-council events, and they organize the Greek Freak and Yard Show events spring and fall, respectively. In terms of the finances, a notable element is that all the money they receive from the SAF allocation is distributed across the chapters within their council. And so although they do spend money on the programming events, right, like those do cost money, all of that is sourced from either MGFC dues that they charge their members, which in comparison to IFC and Panhellenic isn't the, like a larger sum of money because the number of people within the MVFC council, but they also pull from this separate budget within the sorority and fraternity life office. So they do a good job of keeping that separated, and all the money that they get from the SAF is going directly to the budgets of those organizations that are a part of MGFC. So basically, moving on to this. So they, after COVID and stuff, they started to amass a large rollover balance, and all of that was really occurring because although these organizations had given their budgets to spend for the year, a lot of, or at least some part of them, were like struggling to spend that money. Like they didn't really know it was there, that what they could spend it on. So MGFC recently went through basically a revamp of their allocation model that they give to orgs. So in this model, at the beginning of the year, $1,000 was placed into the MGFC reserve account for every active organization, regardless of their size or historical funding usage, and organizations could only use the reserve funds if and only if they had finished their operating budget from beforehand. For the operating budget, the difference between the total reserve and the total sum made up the operating budget that is divided among the active organizations, notably NAPA organizations and those organizations returning to campus, that academic year would receive half of the individual chapters annual allocations, and NELFO and NPHC would only be able to get their full amounts if they use the other funds more or zeroed out their allotted amount. So at the chapter level, these funds were used on educational programs, performance gear, uniforms, recruitment efforts, chapter bursary banquets, and scholarships. So they host like these scholarship banquets. I'd also note that none of the money from the SAF goes to fund those scholarships, so they're still in compliance with the charter. And then basically within this cycle, the reason why they're asking for a doubled increase is basically that each chapter receives a, you know, this new model, each chapter receives a cultural programming handbook to have access to the funding as soon as possible. Chapter advisors are included in the funding communications to encourage its usage and minimize past due bills. This new funding model that was altered to maximize or to minimize the amount of rollover. And there's also increased transparency between chapter presidents and MGFC. Other considerations are that three chapters are basically projected to return to campus within, you know, since MGFC submitted their application. There's basically going to be three coming within the next like three semesters. So there's going to be an increased need for funds as well. And so basically just considering all of this, considering how important and, you know, historic MGFC is, especially here at Cornell, where a lot of the Alpha chapters got their start, the Appropriations Committee feels an increase in the MGFC allocation from $1 to $2 is necessary for the organization to continue to grow and thrive. So with that, I can open it up for questions if anyone has any.
Any points or motions on the floor?
Motion to approve the Appropriations Committee.
There was a no.
Is this
okay? Yeah, quick question. I know that you said doubling in light of historical low rollover totals. Is there any concern that a rollover total after doubling would go from being super manageable to all of a sudden they have a high rollover because of such a large increase?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. In terms of looking at what was spent and what wasn't from the orgs, it was mainly an isolated thing within one of the three sub councils. And essentially, right, MGFC is doing a lot of work now to make it like, you know, very clear to the orgs how to spend the money, how to access it. Cause a lot of them, like before this time, maybe a little after COVID, during COVID, they didn't even know that like it existed or like how to pull from it, stuff like that. So I feel like that they're doing a lot more outreach now in terms of informing organizations what you can spend it on, right? Like, if there are restrictions attached to you, like, yes, you can't use this for late night events, but if you host a chapter bursary banquet gala and that's like your big thing you want to spend the money on, like by all means, go for it. Right. So, you know, I do have confidence in the ability of them to spend it down, but I think regardless, right, like they're adding more chapters attached to it. Right. So if the fee amount goes up by $1, then that basically means that, yes, some of the money from the budgets are going to be given to those organizations, but that also could lead to basically MGFC not having to charge as high dues to their members because they wouldn't have to pull from that money in order to host their big events throughout the year, like Greek Freak and the Yard Show and stuff like that.
MGFC president, would you like to, do you have any further comments on that? Okay, lovely. Any further questions on the floor? The motion on the floor is to accept the Appropriations Committee's recommendation of $2. Is there any second? There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, congratulations, MGFC.
Hey.
All right.
Moving
do you
on.
Want to do...
Yeah.
I mean, it's up to you. We could do ears and minds matter at the same time or split them up?
Oh, we'll split them up.
Okay, yeah, split them up. 5 minutes again for ears, please. Yeah.
So EARS is the Empathy Assistance and Referral Service. They basically offer their three programs now through the EARS Peer Mentors, Workshops, and Empathy Chairs. And they basically just do outreach throughout the community. So they have a good impact on the community by providing mental health resources to the Cornell community throughout all of the things. So I guess for context, right, a few years ago, EARS was formally attached to the SCORN Center for Health Initiatives. Provided counseling services similar to what CAPS counselors do. However, after Cornell University realized their insurance did not cover the program because students were the counselors and they couldn't technically maintain confidentiality, the EARS organization was restructured to such a format that the counseling service would now be offered as peer mentoring opportunities. And so operationally, they have an exec board of 14 members, so there's no at least concern there in terms of running out of leadership of EARS. And their department byline organization still assigns at the SCORN Center for Health Initiatives. And they have an advisor that helps them primarily with the finances of the organizations within the SCORN Center. So in order to become a peer mentor, applicants need to attend 2 semesters worth of training. And then in order to be staffed for their hours, and then this is really cool, right? EARS offers their peer mentoring services every day from 4 to 8 p.m., except for Saturdays, all up on the, I believe it's the 6th floor of Willard Trey Hall and those little things. And so, that, you know, they're always there for someone to talk to. I think that's really a commendable thing. So at the time of the hearing, EARS currently had about 50 to 60 peer mentors. So, you know, really, really big organization. And so during the pandemic time period, right, that was also when they were being restructured. So they amassed a pretty large rollover balance that was equivalent to around 93.73% of their annual allocation from the 21 to 22 academic year. During that time, right, like they were also facing internal issues because of the restructuring. So it made it harder to spend the money. The rollover basically went up and up and up. And so broadly speaking, regarding their expenses, EARS does not typically spend a significant amount of money to provide the services they do, just because it's like a simple, someone's just always at a table upstairs ready to talk to you type thing. And so the organization from that budget, right, because they have so many mentors, it's a lot of hours, they do spend some of the money on providing food for those peer mentors, but they don't directly pay the peer mentors. The only people from the organization that we found within their accounting budget that they pay are basically the coordinators of EARS. And so we kind of made it, you know, we highlighted the fact that they're not allowed to provide compensation to each other from the organization. And when we asked about it, they basically cited that the 2 student coordinators of the program are paid 6 hours per week to do what they do for the program. This paid work does not include training or peer mentoring hours. Rather, it's paid for when coordinators offer workshops or reaching out to other organizations. So in terms of this cycle, right, EARS wanted to stay the same at $1.60. And if we project that out based on their new projected expenses, because they're going through like an internal marketing shift initiative in order to get their prominence and notoriety out on campus. If we ran out the numbers, their rollover budget would basically be at that point doubled in the next 2 years, like by the end of 26. And so we talked with the EARS representative at the meeting, and basically they were totally on board with the idea that we would give them a 50-cent allocation, just like we did to all breaks, but then the student assembly would find a way to claw back that money throughout the next 2 academic years, like the equivalent of that. And then from that point, they would be able to reapply for money on the byline within the 26 to 28 cycle. And the student assembly would then lower our proportion that we were asking for respectively. And so EARS was totally on board with this. You know, I think that the appropriations committee, like we were joking at one point, right? It's like, you know, their services clearly work in their training, just because like if we opposed that to any other organization, they might have lost it on us. But like EARS was like totally chill with it and like so respectful. And I think that was like super sick of that. Also to note, because this was something noted too, is that if they go through that 50 cent, technically, you know, it's 50 cent paper, technically zero model, they're going to be asking for an increase in the next cycle. And they want to highlight that fact that they'd be basically depleting the rollover as a result. And so, just highlighting how sick the organization is and how cool it is what they do and their willingness to help out lower the overall fee.
Lovely. Thank you, Vice President Lorenzo.
What?
That's time.
Yeah.
You want to just say what? You want to just reiterate what their fee is again and what it was, what it is?
Yeah, yeah. So just to be clear, EARS was at 160. They originally requested 160. During the meeting, we talked with their representative, and they're going to be taking, or what they've wanted and voiced and showed to the Appropriations Committee, is that they would be willing to take a 50 cent allocation on paper, which would mean that over the next two academic years, the student assembly will be equivalently taking that amount that's allocated to them. So they'll actually be receiving $0 in the next two academic years. This will leave their rollover balance at the end of 26 at around 15K, I think it was, which, you know, their projected expenses for the next two academic years are also 15K each year. So they could equivalently increase their annual spend by up to 50% and they'd be totally fine. So in this model, they'd be getting no money. We're voting on 50 cents, but as a result of that 50 cents, the student assembly would then claw back that money and then lower our allocation proportionally.
Representative, do you have a motion to make?
No, I just wanted to like make a statement. One, I guess one thing that I'm worried about is that since we're giving EARS and, well, the Appropriations Committee's recommendations for both EARS and Cornell Minds Matter is the same, to give them like effectively like $0. I understand that they have a really high rollover balance and their organization is kind of in disarray right now. But I'm just curious as to like what Student Assembly can actually do to like help them, restructure so that they're like stronger orgs. Because like, I don't think it's a good idea to just like give both of like the only two like byline organizations for students that are focused solely on like mental health no money and then like do nothing else to help them. So like I was just curious, it's like there's any way that like the student assembly could help like restructure or spread awareness about EARS and like Cornell Mind Matter. I guess we're doing them separately.
Hi, so I'm a co-executive coordinator in EARS. I really just came in here to clarify that we have a gift account in terms of financing. So we're not being funded by the SAFC. So I just wanted to clarify. Thank you. In terms of your question, I agree with the finance committee that money is not necessarily what we need in order to like succeed. So for EARS, what we've really struggled with is outreach and like having people on campus recognize who we are, like being a name that once again, like at Cornell is something that you see and you know what that means. I am really appreciative of the student assembly for including CU EARS at the bottom of their emails. I've been noticing that and it's very sweet of you all. If it would be helpful, I could even send more information so that like that little section could be more significant in terms of just like more clarification for like what exactly our services entail. I think the only other thing that EARS would really benefit from I really do think it's just outreach. And I think that's what we're really going to be spending the next 2 years focusing on in terms of funding, is we have a bunch of ideas on the staff in order to like make our name more prominent. And that kind of comes down to doing things that are a bit outside of the box. But I think we, again, have the funding for it. So I appreciate your question. I don't really think that beyond what you guys are all doing, which, again, we really appreciate, that there's much there. If there's any other questions you have for me, I'm willing to answer any of those. I'm not Cornell Minds Matter, so I recognize that that's a separate conversation, perhaps.
Vice President Freed.
To close the debate and approve the allocation as recommended by the appropriate.
That motion. There is a second on the floor to end debate and vote on this. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will need a motion one way or the other. Representative Benson. The motion on the floor is to approve the Appropriation Committee's recommendation. There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, thank you so much. Your allocation is approved.
So moving on to the next one, Cornell Minds Matter. So Cornell Minds Matter, story with them, when they submitted their Google form, like the actual submission application, there was an instruction there to provide like phone numbers and emails so like I could contact the people, and they didn't provide the phone numbers. And so then when they didn't show up to their Appropriations Committee meeting, we were kind of sitting there and we were like, all right, there's no way to contact them because we already tried emailing all of them. Like, I think they got the reminder email about, like, okay, yeah, a number of times. So they got the reminder email about the hearing. They also then got the follow-up email from the hearing, and then they got the email I sent out yesterday. And so it's like no one has reached out to me regarding that. So I'm just kind of sitting here like, all right, I don't really know what to do. What the Appropriations Committee did instead is we basically looked at their accounting books and tried to piece back what realistically they would want. So they requested to stay the same around $1.63. And from this, we identified in their accounting book that they had a charge for a gift of cash of $655. Don't really know what that was, but I know that it was a debit, or no, it was credit, yeah. It was basically being paid out in gifts of cash. And so we were kind of a little concerned by that. During the pandemic time period, but basically like kind of the same story as yours, like it was very hard to offer what they wanted to offer during COVID. And so the rollover balance kind of shot through the roof. Transitioning to this year's cycle, basically they wanted $1.63. And when they weren't there to like justify it or talk about it, we decided that yes, we could have basically just said, all right, we're going to remove you from the byline. Like, you're not going to get a place on it, whatever. Like, you can reapply if you want to. But then we were like, there's no way to talk to these people. And it kind of seems a little unfair for them to, like, not realize this and realize it, like, you know, the next 6 months. And so we decided to do the exact same thing that we did with EARS, but with Cornell Minds Matter, where we would vote to allocate them 50 cents. And then from that, as soon as somebody would find a way to take that money back, and then they would effectively have an allocation of $0 for the next two academic years. And this, while like, yes, this is like, you know, they haven't really approved this, right? They will still project down their expenses because of the high rollover they have. They will still end in the positive by the end of 2026 of, I believe, $1,500. So, you know, it's just kind of like, I don't know, we try to do our best in terms of determining it, but like I haven't been able to get into contact with any of them. Questions?
No questions on the floor. Vice President Parikh. There's a motion and debate, and there's a second. Is there any dissent? Are you dissenting? Okay. Representative Wallen. Motion to approve the Appropriations Committee's recommendation. That is in order. There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that passes. Congratulations, Cornell Minds Matter.
Okay. All right. Second to last one, Alana. So Alana is the Intercultural Board, and the Appropriations Committee has voted to allocate Alana $14, or basically recommend $14 for this upcoming cycle. So basically, Alana is a supplementary funding board. They focus on racial and ethnic diversity and interculturalism at Cornell, while being cognizant of the intersectional identities its organizations and members represent through ability, gender, sexuality, first generation, and socioeconomic status. So since they're classified as supplementary funding orgs, they have two primary functions. Number one, in terms of like the funding, right, they allocate the affiliated organization's funding, which is like pretty much any organization that could get money like from SAFC that isn't one of the primary, or I guess the umbrella orgs, right? So the way the funding works is like there's these affiliated orgs, there's like 100 plus of them, and then there's the umbrella organizations. And those five are the Chinese Asia Pacific Student Union, Native American and Indigenous Students Association at Cornell, Black Students United, La Asociación Latina, and the South Asian Council. So in addition to this, as a supplementary funding board, they also develop their own programming initiatives where they host their programming events for their community. So operationally, Alana has recently sort of gotten a bump in terms of the number of people on their exec board. So they have more capacity now. I believe they're up to 10 members and they meet weekly to deliberate on various funding requests to receive the money. They also reach out frequently to their umbrella organizations and attend the meetings, see what ways they can do to support them. And I, you know, the current split at this time is around 90% of the money Alana gets is allocated to organizations, whether they're the affiliated or umbrella ones. And the last 10% is spent on their programming expenses. So in terms of their overall calendar of events, the events that they've hosted in this past year are all sort of listed down here. And notably, Alana is working to bring back Culture Fest, which is their basically flagship event where all of the organizations that receive money from them, they can all go and table. It's just like a club fest, but more meant for their space. So in terms of the finances of Alana, they're broken down to four main categories. So the first category is that funding to umbrella organizations, which in the past, this is where McFab was located under. So McFab, you know, like CAPSU, BSU, LAL, and SAC, they all got 20K each from the byline base allocation. And then McFab was also in there getting around 60K, but McFab we've already dealt with, right? So the equivalent, and yeah, we need this a little later, but then they also fund 12K to NYSAC from that pool. So that's like the expense category one. The second pool is the affiliated organizations, which are those 100 plus orgs, and about 48% of their total expenses last year were spent on these orgs. In terms of this, like their process of funding, right? The organizations will email Alana with their requests and details, and then Alana deliberates at the next exec board meeting. If they determine the funding amount that they want to give out, then they'll let their advisor know. Their advisor just gives the final approval on it, and then the money's sent out. If there's an issue with the funding, then the advisor will send it back to Alana to ask them to the organization, like more details on it. And in terms of like the total amount dollar allocation, Alana has a soft cap of around $500 per request for like smaller organizations and like small scale events, and around $2,000 for requests for larger scale events. But they technically have a max cap of funding that's around 5K. They just don't really advertise that often because they don't want to like liquidate their entire budget. They're very, because there's no cap on the number of times org can receive funding per semester, per year, per org. They're also very like keenly aware in terms of like if organizations are submitting like a lot of requests in a single semester or a year, like they'll start to kind of pick up on the fact that like they shouldn't just fund them. So they do a really good job at like spreading out the money across the orgs. And they also don't usually, the phrase was like, we almost never fund club merchandise from the budget. So it really is going to like programming and stuff like that. The last two expense categories are their operational budget, which in this past year was around 13.5%. And then the Culture Fest budget, which they're working on to bring back. So they didn't incur that last year, but they plan to incur it in the next few years. So in terms of their rollover, Alana really has over the past, I believe, two academic years, amassed a pretty large rollover. As a result of sort of like organizations not really knowing about them, like, you know, they could get funding for them. So Alana's been working to address that and get the word out and say, hey, like, you can get funding from us, like, please apply. Yeah, that's kind of the story there. Yeah, that we talked about the bottleneck in terms of like lack of knowledge in terms of funding. So transitioning to this cycle, when Alana originally requested their dollar amount, they were at $20, but when they requested to remain the same, there was like the question of like what amount of money would is going to McFab, because McFab's its own thing now under the programming council. And so Alana's effective request, if we use that baseline allocation, was $16. So in talking with the co-president during the hearing, we basically modeled out, because they had, I believe, projected around $400,000 in terms of expenses for the next two academic years. But those numbers weren't really like accurate in terms of like their historical funding level. And if it was going to be a budget of around $400,000, right, then in that case, their allocations to the affiliated organizations would have had to basically go up by like 150 grand. And if they're currently being funded at around 100 grand for that level, then we were like, the odds of that happening and allocating the money out, we're like, it's not that, you know, it just kind of was like, it just seemed like it was like penciled in. So we helped them make like a more accurate, like, projected budget. So in this model, we basically we calculated the expenses for this year. So in doing that, we used the Culture Fest expense of around 36 grand. And then from the other affiliate organizations, we increased the amount of money that they would give out by 15%. We kept the allocations to the umbrella organizations the same and their operational expenses the same amount. And then we projected that their total expenses for this current academic year would be around $270,000. From this model, we then would project the expenses for the next two academic years. So the thing about this is that all of those affiliated organizations, like that total sum of money, we multiplied that by another 15% in the 24 to 25 year, and then another 15% in the 25 to 26 year. We also, at the same time, we kept the allocations to the umbrella organizations the same throughout, and then also tracked inflation, I believe, for Culture Fest, we added 5% due to inflation, just as like a precautionary thing, although inflation is expected to go down in the next few years. But we added 5% to that to make that around $27,000 now. And then for the operational expenses, we added inflation again to Culture Fest in the last year, and then 5% due to inflation for the other operational expenses. When we presented this model to the Alana co-president at the meeting, they were totally okay with an allocation of $14, because we ran out what the rollover budget was, what they were allocated this year, their expenses for this year, and then basically the rollover chains through for the next 2 years. So in the end, with an allocation of $14, Alana will still be left with 38.18% of their total annual allocation by the end of the year in 2026. So they're in a really good spot. They were super willing to lower the allocation to make it work. And yeah, I think overall just very impressed. Like, they're starting to build up the org more. So I think it's all really a good thing.
Beautiful. Thank you. Are there any points or motions on the floor? Representative.
Yeah, I just had a question about like the umbrella structure of Alana, and basically how, like, I'm curious as to like, do you have any information on how like the funding is kind of like by their different like umbrella orgs, like BSU, LUL, NYSAC, like, because right now I believe like all of them have, like, amount of funding, and I'm curious if, like, if there's any data on those, like, individually, just, like, one may need more funding than the other, like, similarly, like, how we did, like, when we reviewed the Slope Day funding board, and we looked at the budgets for Slope Day, McFab, Senior Day.
Is there an Alana representative here?
I can do my best to try to help answer it. So for all of the only organizations that report their expenses to us are direct byline organizations. Like, yes, we have purview over BSU, LAL, SAC, NISAC, I think I'm forgetting. But yeah, like all those umbrella orgs. And we could get budgets from them and find out what they spend the money on, but it's not what we've done for the other orgs. So just in terms of like treating the organizations equally, we didn't want to go in like audit them, have to worry about that. I'd say the Alana structure in terms of like, you know, just separating out everything, right? You have like the Alana allocation, it's split in terms of the funding over here and then the programming. Within the funding, there's two categories. So there's the funding to all of the affiliate organizations, which do that application, send an email, get between 500, 2 grand, 5 grand for that stuff. And then there's the funding of the umbrella organizations, which are those 5 or 6 listed. And they all receive like a fixed amount of money that in last year's charter, like, but like, basically before we went in and changed it, it was a fixed dollar amount per year. So it was like, these four receive 20,000, this one receives 12,000, and then McFab got 60, but McFab has since been moved out. So it's a fixed dollar amount. I think internally, right, if Alana wanted to change the structure of that, we've since removed that from our charter. So they can, as Alana, do what they want in terms of funding more money into those orgs or less. I will also note that in this model, right, like if we multiply out, I'll just do the quick math on my calculator, because I think, you know, the question is like, what if those orgs need more money over the next few years? And so if we multiply $14 allocation times 15,500 undergrads, then when basically the annual allocation of Alana is around $217,000. And if they're expected to end the 26 academic year with, what I say in here, 38.18 times 0.3818, then they would basically have an extra $82,800 over the next 2 academic years to help out those umbrella organizations get more money. And so I think, you know, we've, and this is also in this model, like we're accounting for a 15% increase year over year to those other affiliate organizations, which if Alana doesn't allocate all that money, that could easily go to those umbrella orgs. So, you know, I think Alana, they were very keenly aware to like the rollover that they had and the things they're doing to work on it, like getting out the word about the funding opportunities. But I think with this allocation, right, like they have more than enough wiggle room over the next 2 years in order to make sure that all the organizations can do what they want with the money.
Thank you.
Rusty Swenson.
Rocco, thank you for all the hard work you put into doing all these byline organization reports. I'm going to call the question to end debate and approve the Appropriations Committee's recommendation.
That is in order. Is there a second? There's a second on the floor. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that is approved.
All right. Last one.
Would you like me to transfer the chairship, or do you want to just rip it? And if there's any questions, I can do my best to answer them.
Only if you transfer chairship to me. You want to just swap?
Why don't you just go ahead?
All right. Last organization, the Student Assembly. I hate them, don't. So Student Assembly, the previous allocation was $1.50. This year's request was $4.50 initially. The Appropriations Committee, when we voted to allocate $4.25 to the Student Assembly, but with the three organizations that we're taking the 50 cents from each over the next 2 academic years, those organizations being Alt Breaks, Minds Matter at Cornell, and EARS, then basically our new recommendation, because we incorporate this into the model, is now $2.75 for approval. So this would leave the Student Assembly with an annual budget, right, of money coming in from the SAF of a $4.25 allocation. So, you know, in terms of analyzing the finances of the Student Assembly, we currently have like 4 accounts that we have purview over. So the first is the reserve account, which holds all the rollover funds that accumulate over time. The next account is the investment disbursement account, which is used to receive and distribute funds to initiatives. And the last, or, you know, the second to last account is the admin account. And then technically the fourth account is the collegiate leadership program account, which gets the money pulled out from under throughout the year. So any money that is initially transferred in from the SAF to the admin account, if we don't spend that money gets reverted back to the reserve account, and then it accumulates over time. So at the beginning of this year, the reserve account had a balance of around $127,000, and the admin account had a balance of around $22,600, and the investment disbursement account had a balance of around $19,500. I would note that from the investment disbursement account, it's used to annually fund the $25,000 contribution to the summer experience grant, meaning that at the end of this year, we're going to have to pull money from the reserve account in order to fund that full $25 to the summer experience grant. And yeah, given basically all the other projections that we have, funding the student assembly at around $4.25 would allow us to continue to fund those initiatives with the money coming in, but at the same time, allow us to do some more outreach as a student assembly in order to like make people known that like we exist. We can also help change things on campus and everything that Patrick has lofty ideas about. But yeah, I guess right now I'll yield the rest of this time to Patrick to further add details to this initiative. But
thank you, Vice President DeLorenzo. I'll just add a couple quick notes. So in the presentation I gave to the Appropriations Committee, I highlighted a couple of things. First, the running out of the investment disbursement account, which is going to dramatically eat into our rollover. Even though we have a high rollover right now, we fund summer experience grants, and ideally I would like us to increase that so that more students are covered under the summer experience grant. The other thing that I think is important to note is that one of the reasons that we have such a high rollover amount is from COVID, and then the subsequent kind of disorganization that came from COVID. One of the things we're really working on this year is purchasing and upgrading our materials so that we can table more effectively, hold constituency events, which are required by our charter, as well as work on a couple different initiatives to increase student engagement at Cornell. We also have some like fairly large projects coming down the pipeline that are, you know, in an ideal world would be settled up next semester, but in reality will probably take at least the next student assembly to finish out the job as well. We talked to Dean Love today about a resource AI bot that basically any student who had any issue at Cornell would be able to go to this webpage and type in their concern, and then it would provide them a list of resources for that Cornell offers for that problem. And obviously that's going to take a lot of work. We're in looking at creating a project team to be able to do that, but that will take a significant amount of financing to be able to complete that. There's also tons of other projects. One of the things I really like about this finance model that we've created using the other organizations who are spending down their rollover account at least for the next 2 years is that if for some reason they are spending money at a higher rate than they expect to be, for example, ERS, if they suddenly increase their spending by 75%, we could just that year not take that money, and then they are getting a 50% increase, which comes out to roughly another $8,000 a year. So I think this is going to be really beneficial both for the assembly and also promoting community engagement as well as for the organizations. Comments, questions, or motions? Vice President Parikh. That question is in order. There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, that is passed. Congratulations, Student Assembly. With that, I motion to suspend the rules and place on the calendar Rocco's resolution, which needs to be presented at this meeting so that we can vote on it at the next meeting of the overall budget for the 2024-2025 academic 2025-2026 academic years.
Sweet. So this resolution, I just added it to the box because we had to finish up all the other reports. It's titled Resolution 38, Recommendation for the Student Activity Fee for the 2022-24 academic year.
This cannot be voted on today. It has to be presented today. Point of information.
This resolution just having all of our other appropriations committees' recommendations, the one we approved already, just affirmed through a resolution.
That is correct. But again, we cannot vote on it today. And if you could just give us an overview of that resolution, that would be beautiful, Mr. DeLorenzo.
Yes. You're just gonna have to give me 2 minutes to fix the.
Would you like to present after OSHA's not here?
Yeah. It's fine. It's coming in right now. All right.
Not that. Do you think 5 minutes is enough to present this?
No, I have it up right now. So it's just in the box. What I've also done too is I created a presentation slideshow, so we can kind of walk through this in a more, kind of visually appealing way. If someone could let me join the meeting, that'd be huge on Zoom, just so we can present it. And then also, enable the screen sharing. Okay, cool. Share screen. This. Play from start. Okay, so I'll just minimize that. Awesome. So if everyone looks at the screen,
How much time do you need, DeLorenzo?
This is going to 15 minutes to walk through everything because we touch on all the inflation stuff in here. Yeah. So I've done a lot of work. I just think everyone needs to get on the same page about this.
I'm setting the speaking time at 15 minutes. If somebody wants to overrule my decision, it's a 2/3 vote by the student assembly.
I move to implement a speaking time of 7 minutes.
There's a 7 minute on the board. Is there a second?
Second.
Dissent.
All right. We will now vote on the 7 minute speaking time. All those in favor, please raise your placards now.
Excuse me. Point of order. Are we voting to approve the 7 minutes or to reject the appeal?
Dissenting. Thank you for your point of order.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right. All those opposed? All right. That fails.
Awesome. So,
15 minutes.
15 minutes. All right. I can do this. I can do this. It's also like visually appealing. Like there are hella transitions and shit.
People respect Rocco's presentation making abilities and watch.
All right. So starting off, explanation of the SAF, just so everyone's on the same page. In the fall semester of an odd year, the student assembly sets the SAF, which is then paid by all undergrad students at Cornell in the upcoming two academic years. The funds are given to different amounts to the various orgs, and the process is completed by the Appropriations Committee. The Appropriations Committee then recommends the amount of each organization that the Student Assembly votes on, and then we recommend the total amount. This is a list right now of all the byline-funded organizations with their like little subcode things that we are going to go through right now. So first one being Alt Breaks. This is one of the orgs that the Student Assembly is going to be taking the money back from. In terms of the allocation of 50 cents. So they were totally okay with this. Moving on, athletics and physical education. So some notes here is that their primary expenses are spent on subsidizing student men's hockey season tickets and funding promotional items at games. Upon review of this, right, it's kind of like we're just funding money for athletics to give away when they have huge endowment. Appropriations Committee was like, all right, you can have $7.70 of this that we all voted on. So next organization is the Collegiate Rearership Program. This is the thing where we ran the math and we affirmed the contract that they presented to us. So we'll basically run down the entire rollover in the next two academic years with their allocation and continuing to ensure that both of these programs are offered to the student assembly. Next organization is the Community Partnership Funding Board. So these guys give grants to students to fund positive engagement in the local community. This is one of the organizations run by Joyce Spookin, who's like one of the best advisors here at Cornell. She does a great job in terms of managing money. So the allocation of $2 wasn't, you know, really even up for question. Next program is EARS. So EARS, this is the other org that the student assembly will be taking the 50-cent cut from. So they're going to spend the rollover over the next two academic years. Next one is CU EMS. So CU EMS, what threw them off is they, with the increase to like vehicle prices, right, in terms of getting their new roving vehicle that they can go and service students with, they ended up running out of money and they had to go off that cycle a little bit. This is mainly meant to help them catch up to that cycle and also continue their normal operations. I also think, at least, you know, from just a different standpoint, like, it's kind of absurd Cornell has outsourced EMS to like students, but it is what it is, and the people do a great job at it. So I think the allocation is kind of I think it's okay. Next one is Minds Matter Cornell. Never really showed up for the hearing. Same thing as EARS and all breaks. They're going to spend the rollover over the next two academic years. Next one is TACON. So the TACON Center for New Students, they will be continuing their normal orientation expenses, slightly increased due to expansion of them, stuff like that. But we initially voted to allocate them $12.25. And, or I guess we put it on pause and then allocated them to $13.86, which was that 50-50 split between Cornell University Program Board and orientation for their co-activity that they do. Next organization is Outdoor Odyssey. So just some notes, they'll not be paying back the Cornell Outdoor Education Department. They're going to focus on driving participant numbers and growth in the next upcoming years. And they're also going to adhere to the stipulations from the appeal, up the $2 recommendation to $2.90. So they're already starting to work on that. Next one is Student Assembly. So that dotted line is basically the effective allocation. The $2.75 is what it's on paper. But this is basically the transfer of monies back from EARS, Minds Matter, as well as Alt Breaks. Club Insurance. The student assembly tried to get rid of club insurance in the last cycle and then like nearly imploded the entire system because then no clubs could operate, including the student assembly, if they didn't have club insurance. So that would have been very hard to change. It's sort of a necessary allocation. They did not submit the application, so the VP of finance filled out the details on their behalf. And also because of like lack of communication, we gave them until today in order to correct the allocation if more or less was needed. They never reached out, so they're getting $550. Next one is Students Helping Students Award. So this is the continuous funding of both the Summer Experience Grant, which is what most of the money is dedicated to, and then Students Helping Students programs. The $4.60 allocation was approved by the FARC chair in order to use the rollover balance in the upcoming academic years. So I think that's pretty set, done deal. Next one, now we're on to the primary funding orgs. So this is Club Sports Council. Club Sports Council, they transferred out of SAFC. So this is why, like, you know, 2020 to 22, there's $0 allocation. It's because they just started from SAFC. So all the club sports teams were pulled out of SAFC and under Club Sports Council now, which now specializes in that type of funding. And when this pullout occurred, they underestimated the funding needed, leading to large requested increase for this year. But that's mainly because, like, out of all the club sports teams under them, they struggled so much to fund them previously on what SAFC used to. So now they're sort of catching up to that. And I would also note, too, right, this was a big point in their appeal, but a lot of club sports teams charge dues to cover the discrepancy in funding that they do. I think they said the median was like $240 something, but the average was around $150 per semester. So this is just kind of mainly meant to help them address that. Next primary funding org is the Interfaith Council at Cornell. So these guys, their tiers were recently unfrozen. And this is where that like ratio between the flex fund and the annual allocation was different. So when the annual allocation tiers were frozen, they sort of made up the difference with the flex fund. But based off of this, right, their goal is to limit the amount of rollover. But when they unfroze the tiers and they're now shifting to more money being allocated to the annual allocation instead of the flex fund, it doesn't really make any sense for that to limit rollover the way that it's intended. So we made sure to highlight that when they came to us. But these guys also have a large rollover balance that we want them to use in the upcoming years, even with projected higher expenses. So this is sort of kind of where they're moving. Next one is the SAFC. So basically that dip that you guys see between 22 and 24, that was mainly due to Club Sports Council being pulled out and the four-year reforms, tiers frozen, the large rollover balance. It's going to be spread in the upcoming years. I would also note that 132 number technically isn't accurate unless we're able to change it, because SAFC needs to get 35% of the total activity fee. So with that, I believe their new number is 148.33, but we're sort of kind of asking SAFC, Camps Activities, I know people are trying to work on this to like get them to not do that, so the activity fee doesn't have to be so high, but we'll have that sorted out by the next week. Everyone look at this transition. Sick. Look right at the logo. Oh, so cool. Anyway, yeah, I didn't even intend to do that. Now moving on to the Programming Council. This is basically going to be the overall board that helps oversee the Programming Council, allows them to have their collaborative calendar, marketing synergies, and shared expenses. So this is kind of like the thing connecting all of the Programming Council and that associated allocation. The first of these orgs is Convocation Committee. So these guys have had a massive rollover balance since COVID and previous academic years. And they'll use the rollover at a faster rate than projected in the upcoming years instead of getting the $4 increase that they had requested. Next organization is Cornell Concert Commission. So after returning from COVID, these guys were really hit hard with the increased artist prices. And so as a result of that, they are going to be, you know, they kept the number of events the same, but that means that they pretty much exponentially add a third or eight at the rollover account balance. So as a result, basically, we decided to give them what they wanted, or yeah, $27.42. The reason why the recommendation was at $22 was because McFab, when they do their shared April show and their collab event, we wanted the money and basically the organization to come from McFab. So we proportionally lowered the CCC allocation by what we added to the McFab allocation. So next orgs are Cornell University Class Councils and Senior Days. So these guys merged, I think it was back in 2020, something like that. But when the merge happened, or maybe in 22, I think it was in 22. Yeah, they merged in 22. They've sort of kind of eaten at the rollover balance, and a lot of the money from this allocation goes to Senior Days, but Senior Days still does tickets for their events. A lot of the events are made to break even. So, you know, the cost of experiences and programming the NIFCA has drastically increased because of inflation. Next org is Cornell University Program Board. So Appropriations Committee voted to allocate them, I believe, $17 initially, but then with the 50-50 split between orientation, then their allocation technically went down. So the update one is $15.39. And the last of the Programming Council, or no, there's a little more, McFab. So McFab effectively under Alana received a $4 allocation, although on paper it's zero. And their request based on their projected expenses was around $7.10, not 15, like they had requested, or at least like their projected, you know, allocation per year. So as a result of this, we transferred that $5.42 from CCC to McFab, and then we added on an additional $2.23 because it's basically like a New York trying to restart because they're being spun out from under Alana now, and they're within the Program Council. The last of these orgs is Slope Day. So Slope Day, they, with all of the artist price inflation that we've seen go down in the past few academic years, they've had to take money from other bylines in order to fund Slope Day last year. I think that rate was like, their allocation last year was like around 315 grand, and they ended up spending like 460. So that money was filled in by all of those other organizations. And there are also lots of other costs associated to having this event, which is why the Student Assembly decided to step in earlier this year. But in keeping that sort of allocation the same, those artist prices aren't expected to go down. Inflation's expected to continue. And so if this year, right, their budget is now 715 grand, in the next two academic years, I think $50 puts it at around 770, which should account for also that artist price inflation, inflation of other goods. So I know, you know, people had a lot of questions related to Slope Day, but this was really like, you know, out of all the bylines, like we spent a lot of time looking at their budget, seeing what they needed, and $50 just kind of broke even. And it was, you know, something that they felt so, the appropriations committee felt so. Not all done with the programming council yet. We have WashU, the Willard Straight Hall Student Union Board. They've basically eaten at the rollover since COVID, and they've been able to successfully reestablish programming levels. And they also are planning the 100-year Willard Straight Hall anniversary come next year. So this is why that increase was granted. So in terms of supplementary funding, we have Alana. We just touched on this, but they had a large rollover balance, officially changed the request to $14, and the appropriations and student assembly approved it. See you tonight. So these guys, last year, it might have been mismanagement of money, but they completely ran out of money midway through last spring. And so there are a lot of other issues within the org because of like the lack of an e-board in order to do the allocations, not really doing due diligence on the events. And also organizations could request multiples of sums of money per year. Like there were some orgs, I think they were getting like 20K per year just from See You Tonight alone. And so we were kind of, you know, sitting there debating it, but we ended up deciding to give them an allocation of around $12. So it's still basically a 50% jump from where they were. Next one's GJAC. Spent a lot of time looking through this one, 345 allocation. Yeah, I don't know. We've all been through it. Oh, whoa, that was a cool transition. Look at the logo. Oh, like loops around. Okay. What? All right. Look. Ooh. Anyway. You know, special shout out to Haven. They had a great budgeting and spending over the previous academic years to minimize the rollover, and they're going to be continuing the expansion of programming and allocations for the upcoming years, focusing on marketing to reach the widest audience at events. Next one is ISU. They were at 7, requested 10, got recommended at 850. I remember specifically in the appropriations committee meeting, their president referred to ISU as a social club. And I kind of sat there. I was like, no, you're a supplementary funding org. There were also significant expenses. I think it was close to 30% of the organization that were just spent at social events for the members of the org, as well as off-campus retreats for organizations. So there were a lot of, I don't call them issues, but like a lot of things that were kind of setting up the red flags. And so, you know, they, in the end, they were okay with an allocation of 850, or maybe they tried to appeal, but the Student Assembly voted on it, Appropriations Committee voted on it. MGFC. So MGFC, their allocation was $1, request was $2. They have orgs returning to campus. They've addressed the rollover issue. So now touching on this new concept. So if everyone could just pay attention to this part, if you haven't already been, but the SAF, in terms of like basket of goods, like we spend a lot of the money on like a bunch of random stuff. And just think about this concept for a minute, and we'll come back to it. So in total, the SAF fee calculated that we've determined so far is $423.80, which then we need to find a way to allocate the last 20 cents to make an even dollar amount as stipulated by the charter. So we're looking at an allocation of 424. This is one of the best quotes that explain inflation, because inflation across, you know, my 82-page report, 32,000 words in that report, inflation came up like 35 times, like that word. So as Yogi Berra would say, a nickel ain't worth a dime anymore. And we'll explore that concept right now. So what causes inflation? Increased household income through more jobs available than people to staff them, and higher wages, aka stimulus checks, which lead to increased consumer spending and aggregate demand increases across a variety of sectors. And inflation is measured using the consumer price index, which this concept of a basket of goods is measured in various different ways. They weight things differently. There's like electricity thrown in there, housing, stuff like that. And so from October 2019 until October 23, we have experienced basically a compound inflation rate of 17.204%. And so just thinking about that, right, when the fee was set in fall 21, in that December, when they only increased it a dollar, they were really doing a significant disservice to all the organizations for the next 2 years, because that's where a bulk of that core inflation came from. So this kind of graph shows where those, you know, the numbers on the side is the CPI basket of goods from a Northeast small size city, which is like the most accurate CPI rate that we could calculate being in Ithaca. But as we see right now, right, like the fee, if people hadn't picked up on it, it's got to go up. But going up, how much is what we determine. Using the actual inflation rates from October to October in odd years, the actual student activity fee increase has always lagged behind inflation rates. So using that 2014 to 2016 as basically a base level in terms of where that inflation should be, if we multiplied it out to 2016, 2018, we're already at a $7 discrepancy falling behind. The next year, the fee went down because, you know, I mean, inflation went down a little, so they probably weren't spending a lot on expenses. But from 2020 to the end of 22, I mean, unprecedented amount of inflation, right? And yes, the student activity fee went up to match that. It went from 234 to 309, but that discrepancy continued to grow until around, I think that number comes out to around like $22.71. And then when they decided to set the fee the exact same, basically in the next cycle, the one that we're currently in, the discrepancy grew even more. And so considering, I guess, this factor, this doesn't even encapsulate the inflation that we've experienced over the past two academic years, which, if we're also being honest, is brutal, right? And so this is where we get into, you know, how is CPI calculated? And it doesn't fully encapsulate what the SAF is actually spent on, right? It's been on, you know, the categories CPI tracks are like BEV, housing, which includes like utilities and energy, apparel, transportation, medical care, recreation, education, other goods and services, yada, yada, right? But what if we applied the same concept to create our own student activity fee basket of goods with their respective weights? And so this is what I've been working on over the past few weeks in terms of figuring out where we actually should be. So the methodology behind this is that we look for subcategories within our within the actual CPI index that we can pull data from, and then we go and decouple that to obtain the inflation data that's not seasonally adjusted rates from the Northeast size city, class B and C, which is around our size city. And those categories are basically listed out all down here. The one notable thing that we're missing is CPI doesn't track like musical artist inflation rates. And so what I've also been doing is I created our musical artist big speaker subcategory. And so in order to get the data behind this, I went through the list of artists used on this year's Slope Day survey. And I basically picked out all of them. I think there were around 25 in total that were available to book as early as November 2017. I used the Internet Wayback Machine database and the primary booking websites that Slope Day uses for the historic artists and speaker prices. From this, I was able to compile the basket of the sub-basket of artists for each of the years from 2017 with their respective prices attached. I would also note during COVID, they all kind of fell off the map in terms of booking for obvious reasons. So for those years, I basically averaged the increase between the latest and newest price and extrapolated out the difference over that time period. And from this, we're able to calculate the change in the basket price, which is the inflation rate for musical artists and big speaker prices. Next part of the SAF price index is, now that we have a way to determine the individual inflation rates, we need to find the specific weight for each of those subcategory items. So from this, and this is what honestly took the most amount of time, I went through every single expense of these organizations that they reported from 2021 to 2022 and 22 to 23 to find the historical expenses and classify them to each of those subcategories that we talked about earlier. You then add up the total sum and spend of the spend on the subcategory for those items, and then divide basically that sum by the total amount spent in those years to determine the weight. Finally, we calculate the composite SAF inflation rates from 2021 to 22 and 22 to 23. For each of these subcategories, you multiply the respective weight by the CPI inflation rate components for each of the subcategory that it's related to, and this results in basically a composite number for each of those subcategories. We then add up the total composite number to figure out where our SAF inflation rate should be. So in terms of classifying some of this stuff, right, the ones that you see on the left side, so like this miscellaneous good, travel, and down that column, and then also staging, medical equipment, apparel, and down that column as well, those had to be broken up into more of the things that CPI tracks. So for miscellaneous goods, assuming that those goods are things that people just buy that they have over time, right? So like, for example, one of them might be like marketing and promotion. If you go have a $500 copy charge, then that would be non-durable, less food and bev expense. So we basically break up all of those components into those things. If there was a specific other, you know, category attached to it, like apparel was 100% the apparel CPI tracking, then we use that instead. But from this, we're able to basically figure out the inflation rate. So this data, I think, is so, so telling of what has been going down. So in terms of these numbers right here.
Motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes because it's about to be 6:30.
That motion is in order. Is there a second? There's a second on the floor, and I will be turning the chair over.
Cool. So
to Siraj.
So this results in the overall SAF price index, and all of the processes that we've outlined prior to this in this presentation, and we basically used to multiply that. For the 2021 to 22 academic year, our SAF inflation rate was really 13.1457%, which is a lot higher than the normal CPI rate that was from before. For the next year, we do the exact same thing, and that rate comes out to around 7.6922% at the very bottom. From this, and this is a very, very telling graph, using the inflation rates, because I know that there was a lot of sticker shock with that $424 charge, we're right on the money. And if we look right here, right, using those rates and, you know, under the assumption that the people that set the fee last cycle and only increased it a dollar shouldn't have done so, and they should have set it at 338. We then multiply that 338 number by that 13% from the 21 to 22 academic year, and then that's 7% by the 22 to 23 academic year. We end up at a rate right now multiplied through at around $412. And so also not forgetting in this scenario, we're saying it's 424 of what we want. 412 is what it should have equated out to. The Fed always expects a 2% inflation rate, or at least that's their goal to get it down to that point. And if there's a 2% inflation rate over the next 2 years, an allocation of $424 is right in between where that would have put us at around 429 for inflation. So I know a lot of people are kind of, you know, if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, that fee increase is really high. And it's like every price has gone up since then. And the only way to combat that is to increase the fee. And I think, you know, I've definitely done way too much due diligence in terms of like figuring out where we should be. But I hope that this sort of argument of inflation and where we should be and the different rates. And, you know, I'm really going out of my way to make it clear to everyone that, you know, the fee's got to go up. From all that, I just want to thank everyone for their time. I know I tend to take a lot of time presenting the student activity fee, but I think it's important. And if you have any questions, I can take them right now, or if you think of any in the upcoming 2 weeks before we vote on it next, please reach out to me. I'm available over Thanksgiving break. I can talk to you about anything, and everyone here has my contact info. So.
Thank you, VP DiLorenzo. Yeah, VP Barry.
So I just wanted to add real quick, I know VP DeLorenzo like spoke a lot about like justifying the increase for the student activity fee, but I also wanted to mention that like the way that financial aid works, that any student, like since Cornell is need-based, any student who is on any sort of like financial aid, if you are eligible for like even a set, a nickel, a penny, the first thing that they cover is your student activity fee. So like this won't like this fee increase won't like disproportionately impact like, you know, lower income students from like historically marginalized backgrounds. So just something to consider.
Yeah, Trustee Swenson.
All right, Rocco, thanks very much. And thank you, Representative Barry, for that. So like we're gonna, so if we pass this next week, it goes to President Pollock's desk where she's the final say. If she says no, what is our process going to be? And this is also hypothetical, it might not be the best question, but if she says no, you know, which organizations are gonna be the first ones to receive allocation cuts?
So that's a really good question. I, you know, I will say in preparation for this meeting, I had to do all the data and crunching to kind of lay it out for everyone up there. But this report, which I put in the box now, the 82-page byline report that has all the reports compiled, that's going to have an executive summary because I don't expect President Pollock to read like a small novel in terms of the student activity fee. And a lot of that's going to be those graphs I just showed about where the fee should be and with inflation and why it's so needed. So hopefully that helps make the argument. In the event that it doesn't, JP, I think, you know, we've gone through this process the entire time and we've told all these organizations, this is an equal process. We're all going to treat you equally. And I would say in that sense, if President Pollock wants to shout out a number to us, let's say it's 10% lower than where we are now. So at $424, if she says 10% lower, figure it out, we'll just give all the organizations 10% cut and make it equal right across the board. That's sort of my plan. I know that there are some other like stipulations of things we can't really cut in that instance. So whether that be like the collegiate leadership program where like we kind of mapped it out to break even, like we would have to go and readjust that, but we would make all the math work. I think officially, right, I might have to read through. So presenting resolution 38, recommendation for the student activity fee, blah, 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 all the charter bullshit. Be it therefore resolved, the Student Assembly recommends the student activity fee be set at $424 to be distributed as follows, with details on the accompanying appendix. So that is all right at the bottom, and that breakdown's right there. But yeah.
Can you get a motion to extend time by a couple minutes? Oh, okay, yeah. VP letter. Okay. Is there a second? Okay, any dissent? Yeah, 638. Okay. BB Letterman.
Thanks. Yeah. I just want to say first, thanks to Rocco for putting this all together and for all the APSCOM members. I know this has been a hugely time-intensive process that's taken hundreds of hours over the semester. So I think everyone who's done is, and I don't know who in the room has actually been a part of this, but thank you all. I also think this is a fee we can really be proud of. You know, I don't think we want to be the student assembly that takes the blame for really screwing over student organizations and lowering the fee and or whatever, not keeping up with inflation and sort of getting real cuts. I mean, like we're paying for like CUEMS, right? So these are sort of really impactful services. And as VP Barry said, this is covered by financial aid fully. So I want to commend Rocco for putting this together and doing all the research and just hope we can approve it at the next meeting.
Thank you, VP DeLorenzo, for putting all this together. Are there any other motions on the floor? VP Barry? Is there a second? Any dissent? Meeting is adjourned at 6:33 p.m.